At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. We'll talk about consumers a little bit. We'll talk about inflation a little bit. And then we'll talk about just walking away. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday, today, 17 January. Good as always to have you along, everybody. You know, we try on this program to get you ahead of the economic zeitgeist. Forewarned is forearmed and all that, right? So in that vein, we begin this Tuesday with you, the humble American consumer, and the American business imperative to keep you spending. We're going to get our regular update on retail sales in this economy tomorrow, and it is not a stretch to say that there's almost nothing more important to retailers and this economy than you. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab gets us going with how businesses are planning to keep you happy.
It's sometimes hard to remember the weird COVID lockdown days. There were the odd hobbies, like baking bread, the hours of streaming. Remember Tiger King? And the sudden attention put into home improvement.
And the amount of demand was just, in fact, overwhelming.
Grant Hennigan owns Viridian, a small chain of outdoor furniture stores in North and South Carolina. And he says that demand during early COVID, while it was good for business then, it's giving him a lot of trouble now.
I feel like people have bought forward. So sales that we should be making in 23 and 24, we actually made in 21 and 22. And I think we're going to have to work our way through the next at least 18 months to kind of get back to a more normalized sales cycle.
Consumers bought so much stuff a couple years ago that they don't need to buy as much now. And Sonia Lipinski, managing director of retail at Alex Partners, says big ticket items like furniture and discretionary items like clothes are the first categories households cut when budgets are strained.
Consumers are pulling back on spending and they're going to be buying the necessities first. They're going to be buying food. They're going to be buying gas.
That, of course, has a lot of retailers worried. Dana Peterson, chief economist at the Conference Board, which surveys CEOs, says there's a common strategy among companies right now.
Businesses are looking at where they could find incremental revenue.
Like moving more business online and adding services to their offerings. That's Grant Hennigan's strategy at his furniture store. He's been leaning more on upholstery cleaning and aluminum refinishing.
Especially to those customers who, you know, bought product over the last 5 or 10 years.
One bright spot, he's finally hired enough staff again to make sales calls. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Okay, with Kristen's story in mind and remembering that spending by or on behalf of consumers powers 70% of this entire economy, ponder this. The Federal Reserve Bank of New York reports in its most recent household spending survey that those households are cutting back. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer has that one.
Ask a random person why they're pulling back their spending, and one word keeps popping up.
For me, it's mostly been about inflation.
This random person on a street in Brooklyn is 45-year-old Susan Visakowitz. She's a writer in New York.
The way prices have been creeping up or things have been shrinking in size, and I definitely feel like my grocery bills have been going up.
The New York Fed is also talking to consumers, although more scientifically than we are, and it found spending peaked over the summer and has been falling ever since. People are still spending more than they did a year ago, typically 7.7% more last month. But remember, consumer inflation was up 6.5% in December, so most of the rise in spending is just people paying more for the same stuff. Lauren Goodwin is an economist at New York Life Investments.
While it's constructive for the economy that consumers are still getting out there, they're still spending, much of this higher figure is reflecting a higher inflation number.
Goodwin says consumers might also be cutting back because they're worried about how much they're borrowing. The New York Fed survey asked what people would do with an unexpected 10% increase in their income, and about a third said they'd use it to pay down debt. Ryan Sweet, U.S. chief economist at Oxford Economics, says consumers are also watching recession clouds on the horizon.
When the unemployment rate starts to rise, you know, that's going to really start to affect people's psychology. When they see their friends or families getting laid off, you know, they typically run for the bunker because they start getting worried about their job security, and that affects their spending behavior.
The New York Fed survey found that even households with incomes over $100,000 a year say they'll slow their spending this year. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
On Wall Street on this Tuesday, equities are kind of mixed. Oil is back over $80 a barrel, if you're keeping an eye on that. We will have the details when we do the numbers. Inflation is high. You see it, I see it, we talk about it here all the time. But what if I told you that really it's not as bad as we think right now? In fact, inflation's almost back to where it's supposed to be. Hard to believe, right? But that is exactly the point that Alan Blinder makes. He's a professor of economics at Princeton, also a former vice chair of the Federal Reserve. He was writing about it in the pages of the Wall Street Journal the other day. Professor Blinder, welcome to the program, sir. It's good to have you on.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
For those not versed in the statistical arts, help us understand how you're saying that inflation's down almost to where the Fed wants it to be?
Yeah. So the Fed's target is 2%. But now this is getting deep in the weeds. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
They post that target for not the consumer price index, but for another index called the personal consumption expenditures deflator.
Yep.
That's a mouthful. 2%. The CPI, the consumer price index, runs higher, normally about 0.5% higher, but lately there's been a much bigger gap. So an obvious translation is to a 2.5% CPI target. And if you look at the last 6 months, inflation is running below that, actually, more like 2.
Okay. Is this all the Fed's handiwork? Can Jay Powell and the gang do a victory lap now and depart the field?
No, you know, Jay Powell's a friend of mine. I'd love to give him full credit for this, but I think most of the credit goes to two things. First, falling oil prices. Everyone will remember they were rising early in this inflation and causing tremendous angst. Mm-hmm. And finally, a virtual end to these supply constrictions, restrictions, blockages, limits, etc. Every measure that you can find is way down and almost back to pre-pandemic levels, having soared during the worst of this. All of those supply constrictions were driving inflation higher, and they're pretty much gone now.
Energy, obviously, notoriously volatile. Prices may go back up. You're not worried about the supply chain coming back to bite us again?
I think that's very, very unlikely. You know, if you want something to worry about, there are worry warts in the world that are always looking for things to worry about. You could worry about what may happen in China as COVID ravages the country. That could severely limit Chinese exports. Yeah. I doubt that. It could happen a little. I mean, when I say I doubt that it'll happen on a grand scale.
Right. So, look, we're all real happy that inflation's coming down. But let me ask you about what the Fed is doing, because as Chair Powell likes to say all the time, monetary policy works with a long and variable lag, quoting, of course, Milton Friedman. Do you suppose it's possible, because the Fed is now promising to keep rates elevated for basically as long as they take, do you suppose it's possible that monetary policy, that is the Fed's interest rate policy, is acting faster than it used to?
I think that's not only possible, but likely, but not something we should exaggerate. Mm. The shortening of this famous long and variable lag, I believe, is largely coming from the much faster reaction of the markets to the Fed. Hmm. In the bad old days, the Fed was secretive. Markets didn't know what it was up to. Now the Fed tells the markets, tells everybody, practically hits them over the head with the news. And as a result of that, markets sometimes move the long end of the yield curve faster than the Fed moves the short end. Hmm. But you're measuring that time saving, if you call it that, in months, not in years.
Right. But look, millions of people are going to hear this interview and they're going to say, Alan Blinder said inflation's at 2%, yet Jay Powell and all the rest of them say they're going to keep interest rates really high and that's costing me money. What the heck is going on? How bad is the Fed's messaging problem now?
The Fed is in a very ticklish position.
Yeah.
They can't be as frank as I just was with you. I could say anything and I don't move markets. If Jay Powell sneezes, he moves markets. Yeah. It is too early to declare victory over inflation. It's only 6 months, and that's what Jay Powell or any of the Fed people would say if you had them on the radio. But I say it's 6 months. 6 months is not a week. 6 months is not 2 months. This is not a trivial length of time. Mm-hmm. I think it might take a year of this, say another 6 months, to convince the Fed to declare victory. They're not about to declare victory yet.
Alan Blinder is a professor of economics at Princeton, also used to be the vice chair of the Fed way back in the day. Had a piece in the Wall Street Journal the other day about inflation actually being a lot closer to where the Fed wants it to be right now. Professor Blinder, thanks for your time, sir. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Kai.
The Internal Revenue Service said the other day that it's going to start accepting and processing 2022 tax year returns starting this coming Monday. So we've all got that to look forward to. Also, though, businesses and gig workers that get paid through peer-to-peer apps can relax a little bit. The IRS had been planning to make PayPal and Venmo and all the rest of them send a Form 1099 to every user who took in more than $600 in business transactions in 2022. The old threshold was $20,000. But just before Christmas, the agency said it would give those platforms and the businesses and freelancers that rely on them another year to get their financial ducks in a row. Marketplace Savannah Marr has that one.
Peer-to-peer apps started the pandemic as a tool to split bills with your roommates. They've become a lifeline for small businesses.
Babysitters, house cleaners, getting haircuts and manicures.
Caroline Bruckner is a tax expert at American University. She says lots of formerly under-the-table cash transactions now leave a digital trail. And next year, individuals and business owners will get a snapshot of that taxable income in the form of a 1099.
This change does not change how much tax people actually owe.
But she says time's up for anyone who was getting away with something. Rafael Espinal heads up the Freelancers Union, which encourages members to report all of their income. Still, he says,
I think that independent workers were scrambling.
In some cases, Espinal says, because they were using the same Venmo or Cash App account for personal and business transactions.
The delay is definitely welcome news. This extra time gives them the cushion they need to ensure that they're, you know, following the rules.
I think we can all just like be a little bit relieved that we've got some time.
Claire Van Holland heads up an accounting firm that specializes in freelancers. Roughly half of her clients rely on peer-to-peer apps. For them, she says now's the time to get organized to avoid a headache next year. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Some things are selling. Some things are not selling. Everything has changed.
The housing market right now is kind of a wild ride. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials off 391 today, 1.1%, 33,910. The NASDAQ picked up 15 points, about a 10% there, 11,095. The S&P 500 down 8 points, 0.2%, 39.90. 444, that is how many people in total attended the first World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland back in 1971. This year, this week, in fact, there are more CEOs at the event, something like 600. Than total attendance back in 1971. Also more than 1,000 others from businesses and around 1,000 representing governments and NGOs. So it's a little crowded. So how did retail stocks do? Given that slowing consumer spending that Nancy Moshe Genzer and Kristen Schwab were telling us about? Target down 1.5%. Lowe's gave up 1.25%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Inflation in the United Kingdom, this is the latest figure for November, is 10.7%. And the chief economist at the Bank of England says that even though energy prices are coming down, energy being critical to inflation as consumers experience it, as you all know, he said prices could stay high for a while because of an almost uniquely British problem. The workforce is shrinking. Unlike the United States and most of Europe, the active labor force in the UK is now smaller than it was in the before times. And the cause seems to be people retiring early. From the small town of Swanage on the south coast of England, Marketplace's Stephen Beard has the story.
Seated overlooking the beautiful Swanage Bay that's glittering in the winter sun, David Rawsthorne is clearly enjoying his retirement.
Even just sat here on this bench looking out over the sea, I find myself thinking, I don't want to exchange anything for this. I enjoy this. So I enjoy having that freedom of time, that freedom of movement to do things that I want to do.
He lost his job as a marketing manager at the height of the pandemic and then decided at the age of 58 to retire early after four decades of full-time work.
Over the last few years, I think you just get to the point where you start to think, you know, I'm not enjoying this as much as I used to anymore.
Today, he's studying for a master's degree in history, renovating the stone cottage where he lives and soaking up the scenery.
It sounds like much more fun than working full-time.
It is, actually.
Trouble is, hundreds of thousands of his fellow Brits have come to the same conclusion, and that's begun to worry members of the Upper House of Parliament.
My Lords, I beg to move that this bill be now read a second time in your Lordship's House.
The House of Lords Economic Affairs Committee has just published a report on the UK's shortage of labour. The problem, says committee chairman Lord Bridges, is that since the pandemic, more than 500,000 Brits of working age have quit the labour market and are not looking to get back in.
A key driver appears to be an increase in the number of people who are aged 50 to 64 years old who are retiring early.
That's a problem, he says, because labour shortages will tend to fuel further inflation and hit the government's depleted coffers.
It reduces revenues available to the government for the public finances that we all want.
His committee couldn't conclusively explain the surge in early retirement. John Boys of the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development thinks it may be due to the enforced idleness of the UK's furlough scheme. Millions of workers were paid not to work for weeks on end during the pandemic, and that may have given them a taste for retirement.
Habits set in, it becomes a bit more difficult to do things. So people really did have time to get a taste of it. I think there's probably something in that theory there.
But other countries had similar furlough schemes, and yet the UK is virtually unique in its large exodus of older workers. Why?
That's a very difficult question to answer, and to be honest, I can't think of any particular reason.
Stephen Millard of the National Institute of Economic and Social Research, he says he's not heard a totally convincing explanation. He accepts that the exodus could be inflationary and pose a threat to the public finances, but he doesn't see it as unambiguously bad.
For the bulk of people who have become economically inactive, they have done it voluntarily. And in that sense, the fact that so many more people are suggests that so many more people are able to, and that's a good thing.
And as the cost of living crisis continues to bite, the problem of the missing workers could just become self-correcting. Back in his seaside home, David Rawsthorne loves his life in retirement, but doubts are creeping in. He planned his departure from the workforce 2 years ago on the basis of inflation at 3 or 4%.
Unfortunately, with inflation running at between 10 and 11%, I may have to rethink my plans.
So you would consider going back to work?
I would consider going back to work. I would. We're not in trouble by any means, but you can just like see on the horizon the dark clouds.
The silver lining for the government and the Bank of England would be if the exodus goes into reverse and the UK labour force stops shrinking. In Swanage, on the south coast of England, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Okay, bear with me now as I offer a very brief review of mortgage rates in this economy. The average rate on a 30-year fix right now is just about 3% higher than it was a year ago. But it is lower than it's been in 4 months. So if you're a would-be buyer, what do you do? Those rates are a big deal in real estate negotiations, of course, especially in parts of the country that had a lot of people moving in or moving out during the pandemic. So here with the next installment of our series, Adventures in Housing, Realtor Edition.
My name is Cynthia Cummins. I'm owner and principal realtor with Kindred SF Homes in San Francisco. I think that I and a lot of agents would say, we don't know what the hell is going on exactly. Usually, San Francisco is so solid. And now, some things are selling, some things are not selling. Everything has changed. Things went crazy in April and May, and then there was this sharp drop-off. I mean, we've had some sales recently with multiple offers, like 12 offers on a property, still, right? But the difference between the lowest and the highest of those offers has shrunk a lot. You know, there's been a lot of layoffs. There are a lot of freezing hires. Interest rates are up. So buyers are in a position to be a lot more circumspect, and they're thinking harder about how much are they willing to pay for a property. There aren't that many anxious buyers.
The number of buyers has dissipated significantly, but at the same time, the number of sellers has also evaporated. My name is Dave Westall. I'm a realtor in Lake Tahoe with Sierra Sotheby's International Realty. We have a lot of sellers in our market that are sitting on piles of equity. A lot of people own their homes free and clear. People that do have loans on their homes are benefiting from the low interest rates leading up to the pandemic, and they're not motivated to sell. So homes are still near peak market pricing. People that are doing really well financially are less affected by mortgage interest rates, whereas normal people like myself have a harder time buying into the market at this point. A lot of people moved here during the pandemic. Now, as employers are calling people back to the office, you know, the flow of people to Tahoe is definitely slowed down.
There's a drip. Things are still happening, but it's a real head turner, if not a head spinner, for a lot of people. My name is Mindy Palmer. I'm a realtor with Berkshire Hathaway Montana Properties in Missoula, Montana. With rates nearly doubled, hovering, you know, between 6 and 7, depending on the day and the Fed's mood, the sellers that were on the fence to sell just, you know, a few months ago are shocked to find that they don't have quite the same power that their predecessors did all the way up to, I would say, August of 2022. People are sitting on the fence now. They are waiting in the wings to see what's going to happen with the spring market.
Well, I think that the overarching thing is that when you have a lot of surprises coming your way, everyone tends to fall into fear mode.
There's a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
I think fear is it's an undercurrent in this market that not everybody's willing to talk about, especially agents. We get asked all the time, what do you think the market's going to do, Mindy? And I tell them, tongue in cheek, my crystal ball has been in the shop for the past 25 years. I don't know what this year is going to bring.
You can tell us about your adventures in housing, whether you are in the industry or just looking for a place to live. You can do it at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, you've already heard a couple of times probably, I'm sure, that China's population shrank in 2022 for the first time in 60 years. A big deal, yes, in the long term. Less noted today, and Professor Blinder kind of alluded to this, less noted was a much more now issue. News that the Chinese economy grew just 3% last year. That is its slowest rate of growth in almost 50 years. All right, we got to go. Here, though, is your moment of economic context. Make of this what you will. I saw it in Forbes today, a report from the American Gaming Association that says casinos and mobile gaming apps collected a record $54.9 billion in revenue last year. And that's only through November, by the way, still waiting on December data. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Dylan Mietinen, Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Ellen Rolfes, Virginia K. Smith, and Tony Wagner. Francesca Levy is the executive director of Digital and On Demand. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.